Back here on the Colts Audio Network, here on Radio Row at the Combine 2024. Casey Vallier is along. I'm Matt Taylor, and truly one of our favorites when it comes to the draft and the Combine and getting us ready for the month of April, Jordan Reed from ESPN, ESPN.com. I knew you win, man. I saw it. You were a star on the rise, and now that star is beaming brightly, my friend.
I appreciate it. Thank
you. Welcome back.
Thank you, guys.
How many combines is this for you?
This is number four.
Okay.
For me. So I'm still a young guy in the game.
I know you're working your tail off, but at the end of the day, like when the dust settles on this week, how much fun do you usually have here?
Like I tell everybody, it's like the lead up to Christmas for me from March all the way through April. But the combine is one of my favorites of the year just because I get to see you guys. I get to everything that I've been studying this year. I just get to let it all out with you guys. So it's always one of the funnest times of the year.
What's the biggest storyline you're following early on in the week here as we talk?
I'm excited to see the offensive tackles just because it's a really deep position group. I think we could see as many as seven go in the first round, and all those guys are expected to test as well. So I'm excited to see all of them.
Now, when you mention the test, that brings me right up. I mean, it seems year in, year out, there's more and more guys that are, you know, choosing just to do everything in their pro days and not doing that. When you envision coming to the combine, what's that going to do for the longevity of the combine if that continues to happen with more and more guys and we're seeing even some of these coaching staffs not coming? What is that doing for the longevity of what we're doing right here?
That's a really good question. I think as we continue to go deeper into the combine, you're going to see less and less coaching staffs and teams show up just because everybody's seeing how well the Rams are doing right now and the scouting that they're doing and these players that are making instant impacts for them. They're going to say, hey, why can't we do the same thing and be as efficient as they are?
Right.
They're still getting the same information that we're getting. It's just coming to their tablets and they're seeing it on TV as opposed to actually being here in person. So I think you're going to see less and less teams show up. And then for the top ranked guys, there's always going to be the big debate if they're going to test or throw or whatever it is.
Now, with the top ranked guy, one of those receivers, Marvin Harrison Jr., sounds like he's not going to do anything even at the pro day. I know that, you know, there is, you know, a handful of receivers year in, year out that would be number one guys in set draft classes. And it sounds like in this one, if Romo Odunze or Malik Nabers were in another one, they might be the guy. But with Marvin Harrison being there, do you at all envision maybe them putting forth some work at this point to overtake a guy like Marvin Harrison who has the storied, you know, career at Ohio State and then you've got the family background? Is there anything that they can do to maybe get up to that spot?
Yeah, I mean, whenever you come out and compete and do everything, you're always going to have a leg up on a receiver. Maybe not on the draft board, but you're always going to have that feather in your cap of where, hey, he participated in everything. He competed in every single thing, and he did everything in his possible power to help improve his draft stock. So for somebody like Romo Odunze that's going out there and doing everything, this is a great time.
Right.
Just because all the spotlight is on him. Nabers and Harrison Jr. aren't doing anything. So go out and prove that you're wide receiver one in this draft class. Teams are always going to love that. But on the opposite end of the spectrum, I don't think it's going to hurt Marvin and Nabers also just because the tape is the tape.
Exactly.
We know exactly what they're capable of.
That's Jordan Reed with us, NFL Draft Insider from ESPN. All right, now as it relates to the Colts, what are your biggest holes or needs for the Colts in this draft, and how does that line up with the depth of this draft?
Yeah, I think there's three. Wide receiver would be one, and I know they still have some things to work out with Michael Pittman Jr., but I think they need another receiver in that room, even if he does come back. I would like to see them add another body there. Edge rusher, I want to see them add another edge rusher, and I know Deo Odiengbo really had a good season last year. Kwity Paye is still coming along, but I still think they need another high-end edge rusher in that room, and then also cornerback. I would like to see them add another cornerback, and I know they hit on some late-round guys. Juju Brent showed some promise last year too, but adding more bodies to that room, I would love to see them invest in another corner.
What kind of wide receiver? Because if they bring back Michael Pittman Jr., we know what he can do, right? He's between the numbers, high volume, not a lot of yards per catch. So what kind of receiver do the Colts need to target?
Another dynamic guy like Josh Downs, maybe not so predominantly in the slot, but somebody that has the versatility to work inside and outside, just because we all know with Anthony Richardson, he can throw the ball all over the yard. So getting that dynamic playmaker, that's a little bit different from Downs and Pierce and then also Pittman Jr., more so the versatile type that you can bounce inside and outside, I think that would help.
Now, we know with Anthony Richardson, who was limited as a rookie playing in essentially just four games, and The big storyline heading into his rookie season was he needs as many repetitions as possible because of the limited work we saw at Florida. But he kind of flashed as a rookie.
Yeah.
I think everybody saw that. Do you think there's enough out there to kind of go and say, if you're the Colts brass, that you can feel comfortable saying, I think this is definitely our guy, and we can start building around, because you maybe didn't get all of that sample size you wanted to see, but you saw enough.
Well, I mean, even if he didn't play any games last year, I still think you go into the year saying he's your guy, just because you invested a top five pick in him. So you're going to give him every single chance to prove that he is the guy. And I think he's going to be. And like you said, he just needs reps. But how do you get him or get the most positive reps out of that? You surround him with the best infrastructure possible. And I break this down into three P's. You need protection, which I think they still have a ways to go as far as consistency with the protection, especially along the interior. The play caller, they already have that in place. And then the playmakers. I still think they need to add another playmaker, but the protection is still promising. I love what Shane Steichen was able to do with Gardner Minshew. Just imagine what he's going to be able to do with the full season of Anthony Richardson. So improving on those three P's, I think they already have play caller figured out, of course. But protection and play callers, they still have a ways to go with that.
What about Brock Bowers, the dynamic tight end out of Georgia? He's going to go in the first round, but he might go in the top half of the draft. Heck, he might even be there when the Colts pick at 15. Is he worthy because of all that he can do? But at the end of the day, you know, you're still going to have to justify to some of the skeptics of saying, hey, we drafted a tight end in the first round, right?
I would keep my fingers crossed that he drops to 15. I think that's the best case scenario for the Colts. Yeah, I think he's really special. Maybe not top five pick special, but as far as being a dynamic playmaker, he reminds me of another former Colt in Dallas Clark. I think he's very similar to Dallas Clark. He's going to be a little bit more undersized than what a lot of people are expecting. But as far as a playmaking ability, yards after the catch, he can play above the rim. You can put him in any route in the route tree from the inside and the outside. I mean, if they're able to add him to Anthony Richardson in this core that they already have, that's the playmaker that we just talked about that has inside and outside versatility.
Does that wipe away the need then to maybe go out and add another wide receiver in the draft?
Yeah, I think so, just because he's not more so a Y tight end. He's what I call an F. So you're not going to play him in line a bit. He's more so of your receiving type. And being in a system like Shane Steichen, I think he could thrive in that situation.
Now, with the depth of this draft, it looks like if you're looking at a lot of the mock drafts that are out there, it's a lot of offense early.
Mm-hmm.
Does that at all? I know that you talked about some of the needs for the Colts with, you know, an edge rusher and a corner. There at 15, is the depth deep enough at said wide receiver or, you know, another offensive position that you can take one of those premier defensive guys, because a lot of offense is going before?
Wide receiver, I would say yes. Corner, outside corner, there's a little bit of a drop-off. Now, I like the nickel corner quite a bit in this class, but the Colts obviously don't need one. They have Kenny Moore already, who's a really good player, so they don't need a nickel corner.
Maybe.
Maybe, possibly, yeah. But outside corner, I think the depth drops off a little bit after the second or third round. Now it gets a little bit scary after that, but wide receiver definitely. And edge rusher, just depending on who you ask, there is some depth in this class, but it's more so developmental type of players. And I think the Colts, they already have too many of those developmental type of edge rushers. They need that high-end guy that can play right now.
And they also need a guy that when the game is on the line and everybody knows where the attention from the offensive line is going to be, that guy can still get a sack. Who is that guy in this draft, and where do you have to get him?
Jarrett Verse is probably your best case scenario. I think Dallas Turner is going to go ahead of 15, and then Liatu. I don't think he's as versatile as those two guys, but if you're looking for pass rush upside right away, I think he's the best of the bunch.
No doubt about that. That's Jordan Reed with us from ESPN, ESPN.com. Speaking of that, last year was your first. You were on draft weekend on TV, right? You're on set with Mel Kiper, man.
Yeah.
How did that go? What kind of lifelong dreams and aspirations did you meet with that?
So what I tell everybody when they ask me is everybody had their favorite athlete or musician growing up. Mel Kiper was that.
He
was Michael Jordan to me. So sitting beside Mel, I was like I'm sitting beside Michael Jordan.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
awesome.
It's such a surreal feeling. And Mel's great. Like the first day that I got hired, we talked on the phone for 2 hours. Like that's just the type of guy that Mel is. And he's been a great mentor to me. I've had to convince him this year on some prospects, and I've been successful and failed at some points.
Has he flipped you on anything?
He has. We have really good discussions. But just being able to talk on the phone and him being an open line of communication for me is just – I'm surreal. It's surreal every time I talk to him.
Why as a young kid, why was the draft so appealing to you?
Well, so I've always had a dream of, like, putting my own team together. And I was always that kid that sat in front of the TV and watched the draft back when it was 2 days long.
Yeah.
And it was from 12 all the way through 8 or 9 at night watching watching Mel and the other guys on ESPN, just because I've always loved putting the puzzle pieces together and forming those historic teams. So
sure.
The draft is just so much fun to me. And then just watching and studying these guys and getting background information, just seeing their stories and it paying
off. You don't get tired of watching the tape, hitting the clicker, hitting
all,
the rewind
man.
Button?
Nah, I'm an old college coach at heart. I coached college ball for 6 years, so – I call it burning my eyes. I'm used to burning my eyes.
He's truly one of the best. Jordan Reed from ESPN, ESPN.com. I know you got to go make the rounds here on Radio Row, but we really appreciate you stopping by. Continued success, and we'll talk to you later on this month.
Thank you, guys, as always.
Always a pleasure here on Radio Row, back here on the Colts Audio Network at the Combine, our annual chat. And sometimes it's more than that. It's biannual, three times a year, depending on if he's at training camp. But, of course, we're talking about Eric Edholm, NFL insider now, NFL.com. Casey Vallier is along. I'm Matt Taylor. E-Squared, how we doing, man? Good
we're
to see you
well.
As always.
Yeah, I was saying before, I'm like, you know, we're one day in. My body hasn't broken down yet. I'm good. You know what I mean? Like, my brain hasn't exploded. So this is the best day of the Combine, in my opinion. Just
you're not fried.
Your feet wet, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
By Friday, you don't even want to talk about football anymore.
Yeah, Friday, I'm driving back Monday. Can you believe it? I'm there. I'm through. They keep us through all the workouts.
Holy smokes.
So I'm sitting up in the – I mean, which is, again, like – I love what I do, don't get me wrong, but I mean, like, you know, you're sitting up there writing, you know, reports about guys running 40s on Sunday, and it's like being the only ones in here.
You're from the mothership, man, NFL.com. That's where we go to get it.
That's right.
That's a lot of steak, though, brother.
It is. I try to go every other night.
So rank them for me, though. Rank them.
The cuts of meat or steak houses? What are we talking
about? Either one.
I feel like I'm getting in trouble.
I mean, if you're going for a steak by yourself and no one else's input is factored in. Because you've been here so many times.
Yeah.
I feel like you're an adopted Hoosier. Your opinion is trusted.
And I am
it's valuable.
I will say I am not a steak aficionado. I love steak. I mean, I do. But I don't. I think Prime maybe.
Prime 47.
And then maybe San Elmo's too. And I don't know that I've gone to too many other ones here.
Okay, there's just, Tony's. I would
Tony's
recommend
I've
Tony's.
Heard. Yes, I've never
Tony's
been.
Is solid. I would also recommend Hyde Park, which
Hyde
I know
Park's
is a chain.
Very good, yeah.
Capital Grill, obviously.
Capital Grill,
really
I've
good.
Been to other
you
places.
Know, these are not indigenous to Indianapolis,
right.
Per se.
Yeah.
Harry and Izzy's.
Harry and Izzy's is good.
Offshoot, yep.
There's a place about 10 minutes if you want to get in the car, which I know you probably don't.
Yep.
You do have a car?
I do.
All right, drive 10 minutes south of here. There's a place called Bynum's off of Meridian Street.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a big fan of the off-the-beaten-path
you,
path
you will
place.
Feel like you've transported back into 1965.
Yes.
A lot of wooden paneling, but a damn good cut of steak.
If you're,
and you don't get the riff-raff. No
you
got riff
to drink
raff.
A Manhattan or an old-fashioned or something, right?
Exactly.
Yes. I love it.
Exactly.
I love it.
All right, well, let's talk some ball here.
Yes.
These quarterbacks are not throwing.
Most of them aren't.
Okay.
Yeah, it seems like.
I mean, on a scale of 1 to 10, how PO'd are you because of that?
I mean, you know, yes, would I love everybody to come down here and do it just personally speaking, especially since we go do the workouts and stuff and watch everything. I mean, yeah, you know, like, for instance, I just came from Mobile, and I gained something from watching the guys throw up close. I really do. I mean, it's – you feel like, okay, that guy's got some RPMs. That guy can spin it. That, you know, you just sort of see little nuances that you don't necessarily see. Now, I'm a little higher up here. It's not as easy. Obviously, we have the TV copy too, but you'd love 100% participation. But for the top guys, even, you know, the ones without agents, I don't think they're making a bad decision. And if they've gotten the feedback they need to get to make, you know, that they're going to go to a certain place – the thinking is maybe you just throw at your pro day. It's a little more, you know, familiar turf.
Where does last year's draft class, which includes obviously Anthony Richardson tying it in with the Colts, where does last year's draft class rank compared to this one?
Yeah, it might be fun at some point to sort of stack up last year's quarterbacks and this year's quarterbacks and strictly look at them. How did I view them as prospects? Let's wipe out last year and do it that way too. And I think there's a little bit more buzz about this year's group, but we saw CJ do have an amazing year. You know, we don't know what to make of Bryce Young or CJ for that matter too. And, you know, it's like there's a bit of an incomplete group of information on that group, so, you know, we're not too biased, I don't think, based on this year, and so maybe there's just a little more, you know, we had that kind of top group last year and then there was a drop off. This year stretches out a little bit more, I think, with you throw in JJ McCarthy, Bo Nix, Michael Penix, you know, Pratt, and then go on the line from there.
With all that said, I mean, do you at all think that maybe this is one of the deepest as far as quarterbacks go? I mean, you've got your youth, but then you also have, when you talk about guys like Michael Penix and Spencer Rattler, who have had 6-year college careers where, you know, they've been through the ups and the downs, and how does that view them heading into the NFL? Because they've seen those peaks and valleys. Like, where does that take into consideration?
Yeah, right. I mean, obviously, you know, Nick started at Auburn. Penix was at Indiana. I mean, he's been in college football for a number of years, too. I mean, that matters. It's also kind of worked against him because he's got an injury history, too. But I think it has to be. We obviously had that 5 QB first round a few years back, you know, the Justin Fields and Trevor Group and all that. You know, after that, though, it felt like it was those guys and then a cliff. And I don't remember exactly who the sixth guy was. But, you know, this one's a little bit maybe more spread out. And you could see some of those guys crack in the end of round one or leak into round two. And so that in and of itself, I think, gives a little bit more intrigue just in terms of, you know, boy, what do people think of Michael Penix's injury history? Are people worried about, you know, Bo Nix's arm talent or, you know, that sort of thing here? So I feel like this is going to be one of the more fascinating quarterback classes we've had in a while.
Now, when you talk about first-round grades, a lot of times it's your key positions, whether that's quarterback, receiver. Right now, offensive line seems to be one that's pretty deep when it comes to tackles. Where do you rank this up over the last couple of years? Because I feel like last couple of years you haven't seen the top couple picks being viewed as to be tackles.
Yep. I mean, we've had some guys go in that range, but I don't know that we're going to have quite the glut of tackles who go in that top 25-ish range again. You know, I mean, this is going to be a big week for Amarius Mims from Georgia. This is going to be a big week. You know, we saw Fuaga from Oregon State really step up at the Senior Bowl. Tyler Guyton, too. So, and those are the ones maybe not considered the, you know, the cream of the crop, but could be now. So, yeah, I mean, I really feel like that's a group that you may have five talents who, depending on which team you ask, could have a different order and could all be kind of considered in that middle first round.
Eric Getholm is our guest from NFL.com. And as we're sitting here talking right now, you mentioned Justin Fields. Ryan Poles talking today saying he's trying to do right by Justin Fields.
Yep.
That sounds to me like they're trying to put him in a different situation, kind of reading between the lines there. Hopefully when this airs or when we post this, it's not out of date, right?
Can we please use this?
How do you think this is all going to go down, and who are some suitors that would move up for Justin Fields with the incomplete grade that he has shown himself to be to this point
right.
in his career?
Yeah, no, it's simply the team that holds the most cards, if you will, right now would have to be the Chicago Bears, because they have a quarterback who potentially could be traded. They have the number one overall pick that potentially could be traded. Like, let's say they decide Fields is their guy and they can get the right kind of money for him and keep him in town. All of a sudden that pick could be up for sale and draw a huge price. So yeah, there's so many options. I think what you just pointed out about how Poles said he wants to do right by him, it sounded like Justin expressed a little frustration last week, I guess, when he did the Amon Rice, St. Brown podcast and basically said, you know, look, I'm going on vacation. I think his birthday is next week or something. So, you know, he just wants to know where he stands. And I don't know what's been communicated to him at this point. I think the teams that could be interested, Pittsburgh, Atlanta, you know, they may not trust a rookie quarterback after going through the Desmond Ridder thing, and New England. You know, New England, there's been a lot of talk about trading out of that third pick.
Mm-hmm.
They may not love the third quarterback choice if it ends up going, you know, Caleb, Drake May,
right.
You know, perhaps Jaden Daniels. So they may not think Marvin Harrison Jr., obviously tied to you guys, is worth the third pick in the draft. So that some of that talk is like reverse engineering. I'm hearing enough about that to make me think, well, if they don't get a rookie quarterback, they got to get a veteran, and the best one out there is Fields, I guess. You know, so I mean, it's hard to say, right? Depending on how you look at it.
But it's kind of sad in a way, because I mean, I have, when it comes to people that I think are important, and I would lump you into that category, I have a steel trap memory. And I remember talking to you a couple years after the draft when they picked up Fields. I mean, people were in your neighborhood jumping in the cul-de-sac when they drafted Justin Fields. And my, how far we've come in such a short amount of time.
And it's funny, though. I mean, up until that, you know, again, having a little different perspective because I live outside of Chicago, you know, I mean, it felt like fans were so high on him heading into the Week 18 game against the Packers. Then they lose that game. Justin didn't play great, and he didn't necessarily play great in all those wins up to that point either. I mean, he was, you know, sort of up and down, and yet it feels like the locker room's bought in on him. It feels like there's, you know, a ton of support inside the building. Whether the decision makers share that opinion or not, I don't know. But it's so, and the fans were all in until that Packers game. That really kind of mellowed it out a little bit.
Yeah.
And obviously the chance of getting a superstar has everybody tickled there. But
this might be something we'll never know the answer to, and this is probably the last thing about Justin Fields. But what can change from now until a decision is made? Like, what can Justin Fields do to change the mind? Because in my eyes, I have a feeling that they know what they're going to do.
Yeah.
So it just seems like I mean, maybe it's just me living in the world we live in. We want to know the answers right now, and why aren't we trading it right now? But I just wonder, like, from Justin Fields' camp, like, what can you do to say, hey, I can be your guy in Chicago?
Yeah, I mean, if they like him and it's a matter of worrying about how much he wants for his next contract extension, that's perhaps a factor. Moreover, I think it's going to be, are they unsure about these quarterbacks at the top of this draft? You know, and so this week will obviously be spent partially, you know, exploring those guys. And, you know, there have been these rumors that Caleb doesn't want to play in Chicago. He's a D.C. kid, and, you know, he's sort of quiet. I don't know how much truth there is to it, but you could obviously see that could be the case. And if they don't get a great feel from Williams, and again, this is hypothetical, and they don't believe May or Daniels or any of the other quarterbacks, J.J. McCarthy, Chicago kid, if they don't believe in him and they feel like, boy, I think our best option right now is to stay with Justin, I don't think you can at least rule it out.
Yeah. Colts.
Yeah.
Draft needs.
Mm-hmm.
How would you rank those?
Yeah, I mean, I think defense, certainly pass rusher, DB, you know, would be the areas that I would like to see a little bit more bolstered. But, you know, another weapon of some sort, like you and I were kind of chatting off to the side a little bit. And I thought it was interesting when I was talking to Brandon Bean, Bill's GM, just earlier, and I was asking about the Dalton Kincaid pick last year. Because it was, you know, I mean, this is a kid who, you know, had a big ascent, and that's a position that sometimes isn't lumped in with first rounders. But he said, we were looking for matchup guys. And, you know, I think the Colts could use a matchup guy, like somebody who creates defensive problems, you know. And obviously having a young quarterback, you want somebody who's got reliable hands, you know, yards after the catch ability and all that. So whether that's a tight end, I know Brock Bowers has probably been bandied about quite a bit. Whether that's a wide receiver, maybe one with either take the top off the defense type speed, or some size. I mean, you know, you could go, I think, in either route. And, you know, assuming that Michael's Pittman's back in one form or another, you know, we don't obviously know yet. But, you know, if he goes, then I think you need another big body or something like that.
I mean, hypothetically, what would it look like for Michael Pittman Jr. if he doesn't get franchise tag by the Colts? How much would the Vultures want Michael Pittman Jr. In free agency?
I think he'd be highly
like a first day guy for a first week guy.
Unless he wants to drag it out and just let the offers roll in or something like that. I'd be fascinated to see if they don't do that. You know, obviously that's going to be
I'm just playing devil's advocate. Yeah. Even with him not being the stretch the field, yards per catch guy, but I mean, he's a damn good receiver. There's always this sports talk debate around here is Michael Pittman Jr., you can't pay him because he's not a number one.
Yeah, right.
I don't know what a number one wide receiver is. All I know is he's a damn good football player.
I mean, look, he's their number one, right?
Right.
I mean, were they, you know, they threw him the ball 9-10 times a game. It tells me that they value him and that he put good production out there. So now, look, Josh may be that guy one day, but right now I think that's him.
Now, we talk about surrounding Anthony Richardson with weapons, but you look at this draft and it looks very, very deep at the wide receiver spot.
Yeah.
So it might be one of those things that we've talked to a couple of people that offense seems to be very heavy in the first round.
Yep.
So if you have needs, whether that be edge rusher or corner, sitting there at 15 and you can get the top defensive player and then still circle back and get a top-tier receiver, who are some of those guys that maybe might fit the bill there at 15?
Yeah, and just to extend the thought, like at this point, if you said what defensive player or players are going to go in the top 10, I don't know that I could easily name one. Wow. I don't know that I don't think we've ever. I think we had 7 out of 10 on offense in a recent draft. That was the most heavy you know, slanted towards the offense,
right,
we could have 9 or 10 out of 10 go. So,
wow,
you know, if you're the Colts and you're sitting there seeing all these really good football players like Terrion Arnold, the corner from Alabama, like Quinyon Mitchell, the corner from Toledo, who I think will go very high. I think he's a top 15 or 20 pick. I don't know exactly where. If you see Dallas Turner still on the board, good, you know, high-energy pass rusher from Alabama, or – you know, if you're a big fan of Jared Verse or Laiatu Latu from UCLA, I mean, those are just guys off the top of my head. You might have, of those six I listed, 4 or 5 still on the board.
Wow.
And that's a pretty nice scenario. And assuming there isn't a Bowers or a Brian Thomas or some other big sort of game-changing pass catcher, I'd be all right with that approach, because I do think you'll be able to get – you know, Xavier Worthy in round 2 or something like that at receiver, and it's not a A.D. Mitchell. It could be even so.
Yeah, that's always my concept too, is what is the more valuable commodity, and can you go get 85-90% of those players at wide receiver that you could get at 15 while also getting a premium player on defense
and
as
you
well.
May not get 85% or 90% of the defensive player.
Because
I think
there's a bigger drop off there.
Exactly.
All right, final thing with you, Eric. Let's go around the NFL a little bit. Let's talk about, because we just lived it in terms of the running back drama.
Yeah.
Right? There was the bus behind the goalpost at training camp.
Yeah.
All right. So we know what we're talking about in terms of free agency running backs here, but another unbelievable class with Derrick Henry, Josh Jacobs, Saquon Barkley, Tony Pollard, Austin Eckler, Ezekiel Elliott, just to name a few. I mean, these guys, reportedly, none of them are going to get the franchise tags. I mean, are we looking at another June or July Zoom meeting here with all these running backs? Zoom part 2 to make sure that we're valued? Is that what we're looking at again?
This is like hearing a record I haven't listened to in a while. You know what I mean? I kind of forgot about some of these day-to-day dramas that play out.
We're like Boston, you know? Boston's always a good classic rock.
More than a feeling.
Yeah. You know, you go a couple months, you go back to them like, damn, these guys are good.
Yeah, I like them,
That's right. You have to give your downtime with them. Right. I think that's a great question. I mean, obviously we had the really weird situation. I'm blanking the running back the Jets signed.
Dalvin Cook.
Dalvin Cook, thank you. Yeah. I was about to say Derek something. Yeah. I guess
it's only day one.
Yeah, I know. You don't want to see me on Friday, I'm just saying. You know, Dalvin had to wait and wait and wait.
Sure.
And what's this gonna take? And then and then he did get a $6.8 million contract, which is pretty good for a guy who averaged 2 carries a game, right? I mean, not bad, but yeah, it's such a strange market of that position, given that nobody seemingly wants to pay him, and I don't know, you could get some real bargains there.
And that's one of the things that we have, a you know, Zach Moss was a great piece for the Colts this year, and I honestly look at him in free agency, and it might be the best time for him to enter, because you're going to have these guys who have already made their money, and they're not going to want to take big pay cuts, and he's just now starting to kind of get into that. You're trying to get a little piece of that pie. He might be in the best situation than a guy like a Josh Jacobs or, you know, Saquon Barkley.
Production and, you know, more economical.
More tread on the tire,
exactly.
Maybe, too. I know he's had injuries, obviously. That's part of his story, unfortunately. But I loved him coming out of college, and I was so happy to see him do well. I mean, you know, after Buffalo coming there, didn't know what to make of his career to this point. But he's got to be on the more intriguing list. I mean, I'm sure Austin Eckler has some fans around the league, and I'm sure there are other backs out there that I think will be have some intrigue or whatever, but I would put him pretty high on that list. I feel like he sort of expanded his role about in terms of what he can do for a team, and whether it's as a 1A, 1B compliment, whatever you want to call it. I mean, everyone has 2 or 3 backs who touch the ball these days.
You want NFL knowledge, go to NFL.com for Eric Edholm. You also need a tour guide for Indianapolis Steakhouses.
He's got it,
Eric Edholm is your man. Where are you going tonight?
I think we have Elmo's tonight.
Okay.
I missed, what was last night? I don't even remember, but I missed that because I had to come in late. But, yeah, so Elmo's tonight. And, the cocktails.
Yeah, the boy.
Cocktails. I'm looking for them.
They work now. But hop in that Uber.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't get the car out tonight.
No.
Just walk back. Walk on back.
I think my hotel is about 194 feet from San Diego. So that's
there you go.
That's
you
smart.
Are golden, Tony boy.
That He's is experienced. The, that he is knows the, where to stay here.
That is the beauty of the NFL Combine, right? Yeah,
that's
you could sleepwalk your way back to your room right there. Get ready for Wednesday, day number 2 of the NFL Combine. Eric Edholm, NFL.com. Always a pleasure, and enjoy the rest of your stay.
Thank you very much. Enjoy it.